You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 19, Varys. Varys had never had his body betray him like this. More than once in his life, a casual observer had compared him to an overgrown puppy, and he liked that comparison. Not because he thought it was true, but because he liked the picture it painted. He was the tall, eagerly friendly giant who was maybe just a little bit clumsy, but meant well. It was an image that put people at ease and made them happy to see him. But the truth of it was that he normally knew exactly what to do with his body. He knew how tall he was, how much space he took up, how much weight to put behind his footsteps or his fists. And now he wasn't even sure he could tell you the color of his eyes or the length of his hair. At times, Varys felt like he wasn't in his body at all, like he was watching the world happen around him as he sat trapped behind glass and the dead weight of his arms dangled at his side. Other times, maybe even most of the times, he felt like he was too much in his body, like his body was a too small shirt that would rip into pieces if he moved the wrong way. Except he needed to move. He needed to move or he would go insane. And here he was, trapped in a cage of spindly chairs and porcelain cups. Everything around him was so fragile, so temporary. He wanted to break it all. He wanted to shatter the windows and the mirrors. He wanted to rip the tapestries from the walls. He wanted to tear down the walls, crush the stones to dust, and run and run and run and keep running till his insides burned and his legs collapsed beneath him. "You are going to wear a hole through that rug pacing like that," Trevok said from his place on the couch. "Not before you bounce through the floor," Varys replied, eyeing Trevok's jiggling leg. The women had left no more than a half hour before, and since then, all he and Trevok had been allowed to do was wait. It felt like waiting was all they did in this stone box of a kingdom. They were summoned to parties, waited on hand and foot, and then returned to their rooms once the festivities were over to await the next invitation. They had yet to see outside the royal wing of Altair, and Varys knew they would never be allowed to inspect the rift. Part of him wanted to cut their losses and go home, but another, louder part was humiliated at the idea of having to abandon this mission empty-handed.
"Do you think she is there?"
Trevok asked, leg continuing to jump up and down as he gritted his teeth.
"Who?"
"Wren,"
Trevok growled. If words could have dripped acid, Trevok would have melted the boots on his feet. Varys groaned.
"Still with this, Trevok? Honestly, you're getting unreasonable."
"No, you are being unreasonable. You and everyone else here,"
Trevok shouted, throwing his head back to run his hands through his hair.
"She cannot be trusted. She is not who she says she is. And that story changes day by day. What is she now? A maid? The daughter of a merchant? The prince's bedmate? I have lost track of her identities."
"Trevok,
she can make locks. What sort of maid knows how to pick locks? She saved your life from the marchant dinner whatever. Doesn't that count for something?"
"Which time?"
Trevok asked, pulling a coin from his pocket to spin between his fingers.
"The time she threw the knife at the thing. Are you meaning to tell me she saved your life more than once?"
"Of course not,"
Trevok mumbled, staring off into space as the coin flicked over and under his fingers. Varys let a breath out through his nose. The wizard was glaring at the wall, gaze so fixed on nothing that Varys thought he could light himself on fire and the dwarf would not even notice. He could see Trevok's face getting redder, teeth grinding in frustration at the imaginary argument he was having in his own head.
"Trevok,"
Varys said, trying to break his friend away from his own mind, to no avail.
"Trevok!"
He tried again, still nothing. Varys picked a pillow off a chair and threw it at Trevok, hitting him square in the face, the impact sending him lurching sideways.
"Grief be damned,"
he swore, turning to glare at Varys.
"What?" "We are not trusting her, Trevok,"
Varys said slowly, meeting his friend's gaze.
"We are using her. She's the one that is the closest to the prince.
She's the one with the most recent information about the necklace. She's a very useful person.
The necklace, Travok scoffed. Tell me, what happens when we find this necklace? Do you think she's just going to let us take it? Or what if she finds it first? What then? Are we going to take it from her? Do you think she is going to give it to us without a fight?
Varys opened his mouth to reply when the door crashed open. Varys! Travok! Help! Now! Power flooded through his body, unbidden at the sound of Serafina's voice, filling him with fear and fury, pushing all thoughts aside to make room for one all-important fact. Serafina was calling for help. He reached the door faster than thought.
What's wrong? Are you all right? Are you hurt?
We're fine, Serafina panted, as she and Brenora struggled through the door, Rin draped between them, a young maid bringing up the rear. Serafina smiled at Varys, dazzling and apologetic. She weighs almost nothing, but I swear she's grown a few more limbs since we last saw her.
Careful, Brenora said, pointing at Rin's face as Varys took her in his arms. That end bites.
Where do you want her?
Put her in my room. It's the closest, Brenora answered. They moved from the door to the hall to the great room, a flurry of activity as Rin dangled limp and unresponsive in his arms.
What sort of tea party was this?
Travok said, asking the question like he was holding a dirty sock between two fingers.
We will fill you in a moment, Lieutenant, Brenora answered.
Will she be all right?
The young woman who had followed them in asked, wringing a powdered wig in her hands.
I'll know in a minute, Marcite,
Serafina replied, throwing open the doors to Brenora's room and pointing to the bed.
There, put some pillows behind her and lay her on her side.
Travok and Brenora left to discuss the day's events, and Serafina took a seat on the bed next to Rin, uncurling her hands to reveal red, slick, blistered skin. Varys sucked in a breath, and Marcite buried her face in the white hair clutched in her hand.
Marcite, Serafina said, voice calm and gentle as she issued her order. She'll be hungry when she wakes, and she'll need water.
For a moment, the girl stood frozen to the spot, staring at the weak and unconscious woman in the bed. Then she shook her head.
No, I should have never left her before. I am such a coward.
Marcite, Serafina said, turning the girl's chin with her voice, pushing the truth of her words into Marcite's mind with her eyes.
This is not your fault. I could not stop this. Queen Brenora could not stop this. You could not have stopped this. I could have stayed, the maid whispered.
Perhaps, but it would have changed nothing. Now, I can take care of Rin, fix these burns, and make sure she is feeling better. But I am telling you, how you can best serve her now is by going down to the kitchens and getting some food and water.
Marcite continued to stare at Ren's body, sweaty and pale, short hair sticking up at odd angles. Then she licked her lips and left the room without a word. Serafina let out a sigh and began loosening Ren's corset, moving her hand over Ren's heart and placing another on her forehead.
Is she all right?
Varys asked.
She will be, Serafina answered,
eyes closed in concentration, listening to Ren's body speak in a language he could not even hear.
I'm not familiar with this poison, but her body seems to be handling it remarkably well. She'll sleep for a few hours, but...
Poison? She was poisoned?
Varys gasped, fighting the urge to lunge across the bed, grab Serafina, and start inspecting her for signs of harm.
Were you...
I'm fine, she said, lightly brushing the hair back from Ren's face, then turning to the burns on her hands. She warned us before we even sat down.
She sounded so sad, and Varys was seized with the impulse to touch her, to hold her, to keep her safe. Her hair was a beautifully complicated nest of braids and twists, each curl perfectly pinned and fixed in place. He wanted nothing more than to run his fingers through each strand, to watch each one of those curls come loose and tumble down her stone-straight back in a waterfall of snow. But instead, he just cleared his throat.
It's not your fault, Serafina. You must know it's not your fault.
She shook her head as she ran her thumbs across Ren's palms,
pushing the skin flat and new, pulling the red away with gentle fingers.
She, the princess that is, she said that she did it for our entertainment. She was going to poison, humiliate, and torture Rin for our entertainment. But that can't be it, can it?
Her voice broke, and tears began to fall, untouched, as her hands stayed busy tending to Rin's injuries. So he knelt down by her side of the bed, reached forward, and ran a thumb across her cheek, catching her tears in his hand. Seraphina sucked in a startled breath and shivered under his touch, but she did not pull away. It was only then that Varys understood that he was touching her, and that they were, for all purposes, alone.
"Sorry," he said,
withdrawing his hand and shuffling away from her.
"You're fine,"
she said, smiling and returning to her work, then added,
"It is our fault, Varys. All of ours. The princess must know Rin is involved with us. That's why she poisoned her. It's the only thing that makes sense. She must have been sending a message."
"Are you sure? Could you..."
Varys trailed off, unsure how to speak about Seraphina's abilities.
"Sent anything?"
"No, I don't know,"
Seraphina replied, still holding on to Rin's hand, even though her work was done.
"So much was happening. It was hard to keep track. Rin was scared, though. Fear was just all around her."
She let out a little sniffle of a laugh and then said,
"I can barely smell her. That's one of the reasons I like her. Her emotions don't have a scent. It's easy to be around her. But back there, it was just a wall of salt and decay."
"And you tried to warn me,"
she went on, words rushing out of her in a high-pitched barrage.
"You said that it wouldn't be safe to involve her. It would be putting her at risk. And still I pushed. And so yes, it is my fault."
"It most certainly is not your fault,"
Varys said, once again forgetting himself and scooping up Seraphina's hands.
"It is not your fault any more than it's that maid's fault. If you believe the words you just preached at her, you have to give them to yourself as well."
"Do you mean that?"
she sniffed. Varys passed her a handkerchief.
"I do."
"Then why do you smell like guilt?"
The question was so sudden and so blunt that it almost knocked the air from Varys' lungs.
"I..."
he tried, but the words just wouldn't come. She looked up at him, face glowing and perfect, eyes searching. She was looking at him with such hope, like a man lost at sea spying land for the first time. He swallowed and looked down at their hands. He liked the look of her skin against his, brown and green, earth and moss. It was then that he knew he would never be able to lie to Seraphina Morningstar. Not because she would be able to sniff him out, but because he knew he would never be able to keep anything from her. Not his heart, or his mind, or his secrets. They were all hers, if she chose to ask. It was a terrifying realization. It made him feel exposed, naked, like the clay of his skin had been peeled back, revealing the roots underneath. Some men would bolt from the terror he was feeling, but Varys was the kind of man who embraced his fear, who held it close and learned to keep it safe.
"I was talking to Dravok before you came back,"
he said, dropping her hand to rub at his face.
"I was explaining to him that we aren't trusting Rin, we're using her. And, well, here you are, genuinely concerned for her well-being. I just can't help but realize you're a better person than me. For all my talk about defending the mortal plane and its people, you're the only one who is actually concerned about the health and safety of this woman."
"You're concerned about her, too. I know you are,"
Seraphina insisted.
"No,"
he corrected.
"I'm disappointed in myself, and I'm concerned for you, and I'm beginning to wish I was more like you."
"You don't mean that,"
Seraphina said, laughing in a way that wasn't funny at all.
"No one should be more like me, especially a man as good as you."
He was about to ask her what she meant, when the door cracked open and Brenora stuck her head in.
"How's she doing?" the queen asked.
"Better. I sent Marcite to the kitchens to get some food and water," Seraphina whispered.
"Good," Brenora nodded. "Will the two of you please join us out here?"
"So, given what happened today, what do we want to do next?" Brenora asked once they were all seated.
What do you mean, what do we do next?" Trevok stammered. "We leave, now, if we can."
"We can't leave,"
Varys said from his position against the fireplace.
"We've only been here for a week. We don't really know anything yet. We know they're widening the rift, but we don't know why or how. We know that Zithril might be withholding information about a man who might know where the necklace is, that might have the gems in it, and we have yet to make contact with the author of that note."
"None of those things can be accomplished if we die or are taken prisoner here,"
Trevok argued.
"We can't leave before the mask without giving major offense," Seraphina said with an exasperated shake of her head.
"A member of the royal family has made an attempt on the queen's life and we are still worried about being polite?"
Trevok let out a huff of air and leaned back onto the couch.
"I'm not saying we should stay," Seraphina said, her normally cheerful voice dragging its feet with exhaustion. "We should go. I'm just saying leaving now would be diplomatically complicated."
"Not to mention we have not done what we said we would,"
Varys continued to press. His eyes found Brenora before he added,
"If we return empty-handed, Durrandir will not be winning any favors."
Trevok let his face fall into his hands, rubbing slow circles over his eyes and down the bridge of his nose.
"I cannot believe we are even having this conversation," he said under his breath.
Then he raised his head and looked at the queen.
"She tried to kill you. What will happen to Durrandir if you die?"
"She didn't try to kill me," Brenora said. "The princess successfully drugged Rin, who is not a member of our party, with an unknown poison, with an unknown effect, to make a point. But you are not wrong, Lieutenant. It is getting a little hot in this kitchen for my taste." The queen's fingers came up to absently touch her brooch as she stared into space. "We leave tomorrow after dawn," she said, bringing her eyes back to the group. "We'll let the king and the royal family know that we need to return to Durrandir sooner than expected. We'll make our apologies and extend an invitation for them to visit Durrandir sometime next year. In the meantime, we attend the masquerade and gather what little information we can. Lieutenant, those charms you made for the tea party, could you make more?"
"It would take no more than an hour or two."
"Perfect," Brenora said. "Until we leave here, no one eats anything without checking it first."
"What about Rin?" Seraphina asked. "We can't just leave her here."
"She's welcome to join us, but I will not force her to leave," Brenora answered. "Perhaps we should wake her and let her know what our travel plans are."
"I'll be right back," Seraphina said,
springing to her feet and leaving the room, only to return seconds later.
"She's not there."
"What do you mean she's not there?"
Trevok asked, as they all rose from their chairs to follow Seraphina to the empty bedroom. There on the table was a tray with a glass of water and a plate of crackers, but the bed was empty. Marcite was nowhere to be found, and Rin was gone.
Chapter 20. Rin. Rin was barely aware of what was happening to her after the tea party. Time traveled in fits and starts around her. One moment she was sitting down, the next she was being passed from hand to hand, voices clambering above her. A cool hand pressed against her face. Someone tenderly massaged her blistering hands. "Rita," she tried to ask, but sleep had already claimed her, dragging her down into its depths. Rin never let sleep take her without a fight, and what she experienced in that bed, reeling from the aftereffects of Lithril's psychic attack, could hardly be called restful. Assaulting, imprisoning, confining were all better descriptions. Tears fell from her tightly closed eyes, and even in her fevered state, she could feel them soaking her pillow. She was not safe. The anonymity of white silver would offer her no protection here. She should leave. No job was worth this. and yet the idea of leaving made her ache. What was that feeling stirring just behind her heart, pulling at her center, whispering in her ear? It was like curiosity, but stronger. It was like the tugging at her center was not just pulling her forward, but physically dragging something from her. She did not like to, but she could ignore curiosity when it came calling. This, however, if this sensation was ignored, she would be left hollow and wanting. "This is ridiculous," Rin scolded herself, tossing and turning against the sheets. She could not even put a name to this feeling. And she was just supposed to what? Obey it? Follow it? Not question its legitimacy? This feeling might not have a name, but it did have memories attached to it. And maybe it was the lingering effects of Lithril's tea, but these memories would not be denied. They shifted and swirled in front of her eyes, relentless as the waves of the sea. There she was, a scrawny and starving Seven, sitting at her mother's feet and begging for more stories of her entirely fictional family. Her mind jumped forward to a few days ago, standing outside the mysterious door in the servants' hall, hand reaching forward. Finally, there she was, no older than Honor, kneeling at the feet of the man she would call master, a jewel in her hand, begging to be made more than what she was. And yet, a part of her wanted to stay. Despite sense and reason and memory, a part of her wanted to see this story to the end. Rin was not good at telling herself no. She could do it, but she was not good at it. As she continued to stubbornly screw her eyes shut, caught somewhere between waking and sleep, she could already feel her mind finding reasons and ways for her to stay and complete this job. The fact was, she could not leave, she told herself. She would not allow herself to. Not with the money and safety this job would bring to her and her family. It had been a long, hard 3 years since Brekkus's death. Long, hard years as Rita had recovered from the heartbreak of losing a husband and the devastation of giving birth to a child that would never know his father. Long, hard years of scraping and scrimping and struggling so the grieving children would never have to feel the teeth of starvation. They were safe now. Rita was working again, and Rin had never stopped bringing in coin. But they were all still balanced on the edge of a knife. They all still needed the money this job would bring. "Of course you will not run," whispered a voice that was not her own from inside her mind. "You are not here." Rin moved her lips to speak these words, but the sound she made was barely more than breathing. "Maybe not, little Rin," the voice said, and Rin could feel the heat of his body behind her, smell the scent of wine and ink. "But I bet I will be there when you sleep tonight," he chuckled, and she felt his hand slide up her shoulders to squeeze the back of her neck. "You are not here," Rin repeated. But if that were true, why could she feel his fingers tightening on her throat? Why could she feel the movement of his chest against her back? She shifted her focus to her breathing. She took a breath in, and then another, beginning to force her breathing into a pattern. In, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 1, 2, 3, 4. Out, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold, 1, 2, 3, 4. "Have you been having a hard time sleeping lately, little Rin?" "Why? Still worried I might be there?" She wanted to get up, to run, to scream. She knew all she had to do was open her eyes, and this would all stop. But she could not. She was trapped by her own mind and her own fear, trapped like a small child hiding under the covers from imagined monsters. And she was so, so small, Still, she breathed. Maybe that is also why you keep wearing those servant's dresses. Maybe that is why you do not want to put on a pretty dress and play princess. Are you still, after all these years, scared you will see me sitting in that corner of the ballroom? Her skin prickled and crawled as if spiders were trapped beneath it. She could feel their legs wiggling over her back. She could feel his breath in her ear. "Breathe," she whispered to herself. "Just breathe. I might only be in your mind, but you will always hold a special place for me in your dreams. Those will always be our playground." Ren screamed in her mind. She pushed her awareness forward, away from the nothing at her back, away from her own imagination. "See you sleeping, my little Ren." She sprang up and spun to face the bed. Nothing was there, nothing but the imprint of her own body. She turned in slow circles, feeling the trembling in her legs, feeling nowhere was safe. She found a chair and leaned over it, bracing herself on the arms. Rin had heard the call of her mentor's voice before. She had seen him in her dreams and out of the corner of her eye. This was not new, she tried to tell herself. However, the realness of it shook her like thunder shakes bone. She pushed her hands into the arms of the chair to keep them from shaking. It was the tea, Rin reasoned with herself. The tea and the rift. This was nothing more than the small aftershocks of a psychic earthquake. He was not here, in her room, or in this kingdom. He did not even know where she was, and most likely had long ago stopped caring that she existed. He could not hurt her. He could not control her. Ren felt the sun hit her face and poke her in the eye. She looked up. This was not her room. This room had windows and high ceilings, and a bed that might as well have been a stage covered in sheets so soft they might as well have been rose petals. Panic, new and visceral, started to rise in Rin's throat like bile. She glanced down at her body to make sure her clothing was intact. Her corset had been loosened, and her wig was gone, but besides that, nothing else had changed. "Where am I?" she whispered, looking around the room, retracing her steps in her mind. The tea party, the drug, the vomit. Then she was in the hall, and then Ren looked down at her mended hands, and a memory fell into place. The door opened, and Ren jumped back, her body ready to run, even as her mind told her she was a fool.
"Demoiselle, you are up,"
Marcite said, as soon as she saw Ren. She placed a tray on a table.
"I have water and some crackers here. Demoiselle Morningstar said you would be hungry."
"Where are we?" Ren asked, still clutching the chair, still waging a war against her body and mind.
"Queen Bernard's rooms. They were quite insistent."
"We're leaving," Ren said, grabbing Marcite by the wrist to drag her through the mirror and down the servant's passage.
"Demoiselle, wait,"
Marcite cried, but Ren could not wait. She could not sit in a room that was not hers after being carried there without her knowledge and wait for whoever was going to walk through the door next. She could not think in that room. She could not breathe.
"I need a bath," Ren demanded when they reached her room.
"A hot one."
Marcite obeyed, and Ren sank beneath the water, letting the bubbles fill her ears as Rita's sandalwood oil mixed with the steam and settled on her skin. "What now?" Ren wondered as she watched her fingers prune. "What was the plan?"
"Demoiselle, I am sorry,"
Marcite began, with genuine concern in her voice as she helped Ren from the bath and passed her a towel.
"I should have never left you."
"I'm curious, what are the prince's plans for this evening?" Ren said, drying herself and reaching for her robe.
"Is plans, demoiselle?"
Ren examined her face in the mirror. She did look pale and tired, but she was not completely beyond repair, and Marcite seemed to be the kind of woman with the skills and know-how to make a corpse look presentable at court.
"The masquerade, of course. It completely slipped my mind," Ren said. "We need to get ready."
"Demoiselle?"
Marcite asked in confused and halting tones.
You have had a very eventful day. The prince would understand if...
I will not be sitting at home tonight, Marcite. I have rested enough, Rin said, walking to the wardrobe, hoping the movement would somehow make her feel more comfortable and connected to her body. She threw open the doors and started to paw her way through the dresses, then paused and asked,
Will Princess Lithril be in attendance?
Most likely,
Marcite answered, wringing her hands and sending worried glances at Rin's back.
We best eat beforehand, then,
Rin replied, forcing her mind not to think about the tea.
Are you certain?
Marcite asked, the caution eroding from her tone.
Yes,
Rin said, with clipped chipperness, as she continued to search for an outfit. I am going, and you are going to come with me and make yourself useful. Now, come help me find something to wear that will be able to fit through the standard doorway.
You want my help picking an outfit?
Marcite asked, slowly coming to stand beside the open wardrobe.
You never want my help with your clothes.
Well, tonight I do,
Rin said playfully, smiling at the young girl and teasing her forward with her eyes. At last, concern lost the fight, and Marcite gave an excited little bounce.
Well, if you insist, she squealed. Oh, if I may, all of these are more traditional styles, things to the king's liking. Perhaps you would like to try something a little more daring?
Something more to the prince's liking, Rin asked.
And the men and women of his favor,
Marcite answered, with an embarrassed little dip of her head. Rin had been trying to stay hidden, but that was impossible here, and she had made herself not just invisible, but disposable. If she wanted to stay, to find the necklace, to help her family, she needed to be memorable. She needed to be liked. She needed to be the kind of woman and anyone would think twice before harming for fear of upsetting the prince and his friends.
Yes, Rin replied, I am in the mood for something daring.
Marcite actually jumped and clapped.
Oh, I have just the thing. And your makeup, something bold, we will paint your mask on.
The bolder the better, Rin said, turning back to the clothes to select her costume. Chapter 21, Trevac. Altair, true to form, was determined to stimulate all of Trevac's senses at once, including memory and outrage. The golden light that spilled from the room was pocked with patterns and bright jewel tones. The smell of food and the clamor of voices almost bowled him down as heat slapped him in the face.
Why, in thought's name, do they have 5 fires going in the middle of summer?
The queen whispered as she struggled not to sway on her feet.
Judging by the decor, they probably felt it went with the overall motif,
Seraphina replied, scanning the room and offering the queen an arm for support. The queen ignored the gesture, asking,
Which is what? Elegant but dehydrated dwarf?
The invitation had said the mask was to honor the cultures of Durandir and the rest of the mortal plane. Honoring was not how Trevac would have put it. Subtly mocking would be more accurate. As a result, most everyone was dressed head to toe in plaid of some sort. Furs were draped over tables, couches, and shoulders. Fires roared in every hearth, and nobles rocked on their heels as they chugged mead from horns and servants weaved around the aristocratic obstacles. There were no official banquet tables, no official seats. Instead, people were draped over couches or standing in small clumps.
This is ridiculous,
Trevac murmured, resisting the urge to tug at his cravat.
What is ridiculous is your outfit,
Varys said.
What's wrong with my outfit? It's orange. So, lots of the noblesse wear orange,
Trevac said, looking down at his suit and tugging on his vest.
Why didn't you wear your uniform? You like your uniform.
Trevac had no answer for this. He did like his uniform. He took pride in what it represented and what it said about him. But for some reason, when he reached for it tonight, he felt shame, felt sure that if he put it on and went to this party, it would be nothing more than a joke. Why? He asked himself as he looked at his companions, who had all chosen to dress more or less like themselves. Serafina was wearing one of her own long-sleeved, high-necked frocks, a lavender dress which tied at the throat. The noblesse had put on dwarven costumes, but the queen wore the true colors of Durandir. Her woolen apron dress and fur collar might have been hot, but at least she looked like who and what she was. And he had chosen this. Why? Why had he... A sudden piercing pain stabbed him in the eyes, causing him to blink and shake the question from his head.
Maybe I like this suit,
Trevok said, trying not to pull at the stiff fabric. Varys looked at him like he had just told a very bad joke.
You like that suit?
Varys, can you see Ren?
Serafina asked, standing on tiptoe, pushing her way slowly forward as she peered over and around the party's other guests.
I'm telling you, she is gone,
Trevok said with absolute certainty.
She's halfway to White Silver by now and not looking back.
You can't know that, and we can't just leave her here without telling her we're going,
Serafina insisted. Trevok was about to point out that Rin had left without telling them she was going, when reality shifted. The room flashed in his mind. Gone was the golden light of the palace, replaced with the dim glow of a tavern. The sounds of an orchestra disappeared, and instead he heard a traveler's fiddle. Trevok jerked in surprise, crashing into Varys' legs.
Are you all right?
The giant asked, catching him by the shoulders. Serafina was by his side before he could breathe, grabbing his wrist and making her examinations.
You need to eat something. And why haven't you had anything to drink since breakfast?
I'm perfectly fine,
Trevok said, shaking them both off and blinking as his eyes readjusted to the light of Altair. Serafina, keep an eye out for Ren, the queen said. Lieutenant, stay with Serafina and consider eating something, maybe even finding a chair. You look almost as bad as I do. Do both of you still have your charms? Serafina and Trevok held up their wrists to show the little bits of rope and wood that had saved the queen earlier that day. Good. Varys, come with me to deliver our apologies to the royal family. Trevok watched as the emerald green of the queen's dress was swallowed by the crowd.
Where am I?
He thought to himself, desperately grabbing at details for stability. Gold light, silk dresses, the lace tightening around his neck. Yes, this was Altair. His parents' inn and Durandir were miles away. That night, a lifetime ago.
Yes, do the costumes and songs not feel familiar? Perhaps that is why your memory is playing tricks on you.
Athrall's taunting voice echoed around him like wind. They were not beside him, but Trevok knew where they would be. He knew what they wanted him to see. He told himself not to look. There was no point except to torture himself. Even so, he lifted his gaze and found them in the crowd. Athrall wore the face of one of the true Fae, a girl midway through her adolescence, with skin as white and bright as a cloud against the summer sky, and eyes that glowed with honey-warm light. Platinum strands escaped her braid to blow around her face in a non-existent wind. She was beautiful. All the Fae were beautiful, but she had a storybook quality to her beauty, frozen forever in memory and myth because his mind refused to let her go. Athrall smirked at Trevok, and for the first time in a very long time, Trevok remembered to be afraid of them. He liked to think he never forgot what they were, what they could do, but it was all too easy to forget how deadly a snake could be when you lived your whole life with it wrapped around your neck.
Food, there,
Serafina said, allowing Trevok to look away from the ghost in the corner. He quickly threw up the wall in his mind and followed Serafina to a quiet spot by one of the many small tables piled high with food.
Sit here while I make you a plate,
she said with chipper efficiency.
Serafina, I am all right, and I can get my own food,
he replied, refusing to be coddled or shaken.
Fine. You get food, and I'll get you a drink.
She was gone before he could tell her no. He stacked his plate with cold meats, cheeses, and nuts, all the time trying not to let memories create cracks for a thrall to seep through. He blinked, and Serafina was at his side, gently pushing him into a chair.
"Sit, sit,"
she insisted, placing a goblet in his hand that smelled like spices and enough spirits to knock him to the ground.
"Do not drink too much of that. Just sip till the water I had them fetch from the kitchens gets here."
Trevok drank it without complaint, barely remembering to pass his charm over the cup. He absentmindedly munched his food, neglected conversation with Serafina, and stared into space as he tried to order his thoughts and quiet his heart. He had almost succeeded in thinking about nothing when one of the strangest laughs he had ever heard cut across the room and straight into his ears. It reminded him of seagulls somehow, but lower and more melodic. His head turned instinctively towards the noise. The crowd parted, and there she was, a creature of legend, holding court and laughing with the young noblissa. As a boy, the tales of Kinnikat, the fae trickster spirit, were some of his favorites. Kinnikat stealing the butterfly's wings, Kinnikat running with the wolves, Kinnikat outwitting and escaping from the treacherous sorcerer. And now here she was, in flesh and blood, with artfully tousled hair and black wings painted to form a mask across her face. Her shoulders were bare, and the fabric of her dress danced in the light, shifting from blue to black. Instead of the wide skirts and ruffles of the other elven ladies, her silhouette was slim, emphasized by the plunging V of her neckline and the golden belt around her waist. The dress was also lighter than the other ladies. It floated around her like midnight mist. The overall effect was that she was someone who could change into anything, a butterfly, a bird, a bat, or maybe just a stray beam of light. The elvish aristocrats circled around her, trying to box her in, but even from here, Trevok could tell that this was a woman who would not be caught unless she chose to be. For a moment, Trevok assumed that a thrall had plucked some childhood daydream from his mind, but then he saw her face. Her face was not a cold and unmoving picture. Her face was alive with mischief and merriment. It invited you to share jokes and secrets, to laugh, to dance, to run and never look back. He longed for the right words to describe her. Not beautiful, at least not in the way Serafina was beautiful. Enchanting did not quite seem to fit either. He watched her laugh again at some joke the man in front of her had just said. Her head went back, her shoulders rolled, and her hand came up to touch her throat. It was not three separate movements, but one continuous movement rotating and unspooling into the next. "Striking," he whispered to himself, and the word felt right on his tongue.
"What was that?"
Serafina asked, eyes darting over the room and its guests, scanning the faces for Ren. The fae girl sparked in his mind again, and for a flickering second, a thrall was standing next to the living trickster spirit. Trevok reached in frustration for the wall again, already tired and knowing he would not be able to hold it in place for long. Then he caught a glint of gold inside the black wings on the woman's face. All thoughts of a thrall, the wall, and his past were driven from his mind.
"Ren,"
he said, almost not believing it when he heard the name come out of his mouth.
"What? Where?"
Serafina asked, gaze gliding over the glamorous sprite that was currently having her hand fondled by some dandy in a wig.
"There, right there,"
Trevok insisted, nodding his head in an effort to keep from pointing. Now that he knew who he was looking at, the woman was so clearly Ren, Trevok wanted to kick himself for not ever recognizing her.
"Her?"
Serafina said, skepticism driving all the hope from her voice.
"She looks nothing like Ren."
"What are you talking about? That woman looks exactly like Ren, because that is Ren."
It was unreasonable for him to be losing patience, but this had been a very long day, which was turning into a very long night. Besides, the two of them had now been gawking at this woman from across the room for far too long, and he had no desire to be arguing about something so obvious.
"Look,"
he said with a sigh, resisting the urge to point.
There, next to her, that's Marcite.
That does look a little like Marcite, Seraphina said, squinting in confusion. But all the palace staff look the same.
That is Ren,
Trabok said, giving up on not pointing, and instead just gesturing with his whole hand for emphasis.
Look at the point of her nose. Look at the angle of her cheekbones. Look at how she holds herself or the curve of her neck while she's speaking. Look at what?
Seraphina had stopped looking at Ren and was staring at him with raised eyebrows and a quivering lip.
Oh, nothing, she hiccuped. I just never realized you were such an authority on this particular subject.
He was not going to blush, he told himself, as the heat creeped up his neck. After all, he was not the one missing the obvious.
Look at her eyes. Do you know anyone else with eyes that color?
Seraphina sighed and looked back across the room.
You can't possibly be able to see what color.
God surround me, that's Ren.
Trabok was preparing a well-deserved I told you so, but before he could, Seraphina was out of her chair and moving across the room.
Seraphina, wait!
Trabok called, springing to his feet to give chase. As the crowd parted around them, Ren let out another one of her avian-like cackles. He watched as she leaned forward, hand on a gentleman's chest, bending close to whisper in his ear. As the space between their bodies disappeared, the room stuttered and vanished. He was standing on the landing of the outer servant stairs of his parents' inn, the lights of Durandur beneath him, the fey girl wrapped in his arms. He could feel the fabric of her dress under his fingers.
No!
He shouted in his head, forcing himself back to reality with a wince. He opened his eyes and found himself 3/4 of the way to Ren. How had that happened? How had he gotten here so fast?
Seraphina, you are every stitch the princess tonight, Ren called, stretching her arms wide and welcoming, smiling not like someone who had been violently ill earlier that day, but like a hostess singling out one of her favorite guests.
Seraphina was not smiling. Seraphina was practically crying in relief. Trabok watched as the normally controlled and reserved woman gripped Ren by the arms and pulled her into a fierce hug. Ren had just enough time to get in a startled, oh, before Seraphina released her and said,
So sorry. I'm just so relieved to see you. We went to your room and you were gone and... I'm sorry I had to leave without saying goodbye,
Ren said, smile staying firmly in place, but shifting from warm to tired in the blink of an eye.
Marcite and I just had to get back to my rooms to prepare for the festivities tonight. I was not going to let a little stomach upset keep me from a party like this.
Stomach upset?
Trabok challenged.
Is that what you're calling it?
Tonight, within these walls, yes, that is what I am calling it,
Ren said, eyes and voice as sharp and cutting as glass. For one unsettling moment, Trabok felt something very close to admiration for the woman in front of him. She had bound her fear in iron and determination. She would not be shaken from her purpose. Of course, then she opened her mouth and chased all positive feelings away.
Trabok, your outfit is striking, she said, eyes traveling up and down his body in a way that made him feel like moldy bread being examined before being tossed onto the rubbish heap.
I've been told orange is not my color,
Trabok grumbled, folding his arms behind his back to keep from pulling at the lace of his sleeves.
Oh, nonsense. You make a perfectly lovely carnation. Well, you look lovely, Ren,
Seraphina said, before an argument could really get going.
A storybook come to life.
It is all credit to Marcite. The dress, the makeup, all her, Ren said, inviting the young girl into their circle.
I've been begging her to let me put her in something that wasn't white or brown.
Marcite smiled, but her words were met with silence. Ren stared at Seraphina for a long breath. Seraphina stared back at Ren before flicking her eyes to Marcite. Ren's eyebrow twitched. Then she turned to Marcite and asked,
Would you mind fetching me another drink? Feel free to linger at the refreshments table by that young man who has been eyeing you since the moment we walked in.
Marcite sent a worried look between the three of them and then nodded.
I will linger,
but I will be back.
I'm sorry, Serafina said after Marcite had gone. I think we can trust her, but I just don't want to put her in a position to have to deny anything.
No, that is good. Prudent. What do you need to say?
We're leaving. Tomorrow morning.
Rin's face went blank. Whatever figurative mask she had been wearing slid to the floor and left her appearance stripped of surprise or fear or anger. Just blank.
Why are you telling me this?
She asked, metallic eyes staring past them to the crowd beyond.
Because we want you to come with us, Serafina said,
as if she had just had to explain why Rin should not touch a hot stove.
My business is not done here,
Rin answered, shaking her head.
Rin, you can't stay,
Serafina hissed. Rin's gaze snapped up to Serafina, and Trevok could almost see the defiance burning in her mind.
I might be able to wrap up my inquiries tonight. If I do, I will be happy to return with you to Whitesilver. If not, I will have to make my own way home.
You cannot be serious,
Trevok cut in.
How many people are going to have to poison you before you run?
As many as it takes for me to get what I came here for.
Trevok rocked back on his heels and examined this woman open-mouthed. That strange, almost admiration was swirling around in his mind again. Determined, stubborn, fierce, smart enough to get herself into trouble, but too proud to realize she was in over her head.
You are not like most women, are you?
The question was out of his mouth before he had even realized he was thinking the words.
What do you mean by that?
Rin asked, grinning in a way that told Trevok there was no good answer. What he had meant, of course, was that she was insane. Any other sensible woman would be packing her bags. No, she would have already left. But that was not what Trevok said. What he said was,
you are brave. You keep your eye on the goal and you do not lose sight of it.
I see, she nodded, then added, so Durandur does not allow women in its army, then?
Of course Durandur allows women in its army,
Trevok said, jaw starting to tighten under her scrutiny.
Laughing at you,
the thought whispered around his mind, and then was gone just as quickly. But they turn tail when the fighting starts.
There is no one braver than the men and women of Durandur,
Trevok growled, feeling the sand start to shift beneath his feet.
How about the Queen and Serafina, then?
Rin said, flicking a lazy wrist in the direction of a shocked Serafina.
I suppose they cannot be trusted to finish the job when the job gets dangerous.
That is not what I meant, and you know it,
Trevok said through gritted teeth.
Laughing at you. She is laughing.
The words repeated in his head.
What did you mean?
It was a compliment, he said, barely resisting the urge to shout. I meant you are unique, you are...
He groped in his mind for a word that was neutrally positive and would end this conversation.
Funny.
Oh, Trevok,
Serafina groaned, lowering her head to her hand.
Funny,
Rin asked. As slowly as a cat stalking a mouse.
Yes, funny,
Trevok said, not at all sure that was what he wanted to say, but digging his heels in now that he had said it.
Very few women ever try to be funny.
Really?
Rin asked, in a bored, almost pleasant tone.
Because, in my experience, most women are very funny. Which leads me to believe that your experience with women is either woefully lacking. Or our humor just goes right over your head.
Laughing at you.
Why are you making this so hard?
Maybe because it has been a long day, and I do not want a compliment that comes at the expense of half the people in this room. Or maybe you are just making it too easy,
Rin said, folding her arms and staring at him like he was the trash that was refusing to take itself out. Trevok seethed as he stared at her. He could feel his face turning a bright red that was sure to clash with the hideous bright orange of his suit, a suit he hated almost as much as Rin. Just then, Marcite returned, tugging on Ren's elbow and whispering in her ear. The world tipped, swayed, and stuttered, leaving him for a flashing second back in his parents' inn.
Laughing at you.
Rin's giggle snapped reality back into place. He knew it was fake. He knew she was baiting him, but still he demanded,
"What are you laughing at?"
She blinked, slow, sleepy eyes down at him, as if she had forgotten he was there.
"Oh, Marcy was just telling me a joke. I would repeat it, but I do not think you would get it."
"Trabok!"
boomed a voice behind him. He turned to see Varys and the queen making their way to join them, and by the time he had turned back around, Rin was gone, disappearing like a cat down a back alley.
"Who was that?"
Varys asked, as he drew up beside them.
"Rin," Seraphina sighed.
"That was Rin? Oh, that was Rin, insufferable as always,"
Trabok growled, throwing his hands in the air and wheeling around to face Varys.
"Whoa, what's the matter with you?"
the jolly giant asked.
"He shot wide," Seraphina provided, with yet another sigh.
"Oh,"
Varys replied, drawing the single syllable out as if he was apologizing for missing the obvious.
"I did not shoot wide with her,"
Trevok said, turning to face Seraphina.
"I was not aiming at her. And another thing..."
"Children, this needs to wait," the queen interrupted. "We are missing something." They followed her gaze to the far wall, where the royal family was clustered together in front of a large red and gold curtain. Zithril was gesturing wildly, throwing his arms wide to encompass the entire room as the king stamped his foot and jabbed a finger into his son's chest. Spit flew from their rigid, rage-filled lips as their faces grew red from yelling or from drink or both. Just when the argument appeared to be reaching its peak, King Ferge pulled back his hand to strike. However, the princess stepped between the two men, grabbing her father by the wrist and leading him from the room. The rest of the revelers were unfazed by the domestic squabbles of the royal family and carried on drinking and celebrating as if nothing was wrong.
"I take it they do not like that we are leaving tomorrow?"
Seraphina whispered. "It would appear not," the queen said, tone dry, eyes focused. They watched as Prince Zithril straightened his shirt and plucked a drink off a passing tray. The prince raised the glass to his lips, then his stare locked on the queen. They held each other's gaze for a minute, before a slow smile spread across his face, and he lifted his cup in salute.
"What was that?"
Seraphina asked.
"I'm not sure, but I think we're about to find out,"
the queen answered. Without warning, the prince jumped onto a neighboring table with a crash, kicking silverware and food to the floor. Gasps and outraged shouts came from the men and women nearby as a tense hush fell over the rest of the crowd. All eyes turned and found Prince Zithril of Altair. The room waited, holding its breath, and it was clear that Zithril enjoyed making them wait. Only after the stirring silence around them had settled did his speech begin.
"Demoiselles and messieurs, honorable men and women of the court, and esteemed guests from afar, thank you for joining me here this evening."
A polite smattering of applause went around the room, and the prince held up his hands for quiet.
"Thank you, thank you. This gathering was meant to be a celebration of our world and the culture of our visitors. However, unfortunately, it is also going to have to serve as a farewell. I know. I do. I'm sad to see them go so soon, especially when we have not yet shown them all Altair can be known for."
He stopped to quietly laugh to himself at some private memory as he rubbed a hand across his chin.
"We speak so often of what Altair has to offer. To the rest of the world, we might be the Hidden Kingdom, but to us, we are forever the Chosen Kingdom."
Cheers erupted from his captive audience, and the prince once again had to call for quiet.
"I agree,"
he said, doing a small circle, smiling, and raising his glass to the room.
"But chosen does not mean separate. So why do we keep ourselves separate? If we want to be known for so much in this world,
Why don't we introduce ourselves?
Murmurs began, an uncomfortable shifting in seats, but some were fascinated. The young, gleaming eyes remained fixed to the speaker, their souls begging to hear his next word. Trebok knew that look, knew the look of a people hungry for change.
Ah, shame on me. I've made this goodbye about politics and not our guests.
A nervous laugh went around the room as shoulders and faces relaxed.
Perhaps what I should say is, we here in Altair might have been chosen by the Eterosh, but we are still part of this plane, and our parents were still made from this world. We are descendants of the Fae, so tonight, let us honor our guests in the way of our ancestors, and send them on their way with a true celebration.
As the last syllable left his lips, the curtain behind him dropped to reveal a stage filled with instruments and musicians. Gasps and excited shouts rippled through the crowd. A few men and women even clapped. Zithril did another slow, smiling circle on his table before leaping down and extending a hand to the queen across the crowded room.
Your Majesty, would you do me the honor of joining me on the dance floor?
Trebok thought he heard a groan escape the queen's lips as she reached out an arm to steady herself on his shoulder. You are too kind, Your Highness. However, as you can see, I've already had too much fun this evening, and I am a bit unsteady on my feet. A commiserative laugh rippled through the room. She paused before gesturing to Seraphina and saying, Please, allow me to send Lady Morningstar and Ambassador Varys to represent me and my delegation on the floor. All eyes turned to Seraphina, and a genuine, joyful applause filled the room.
A goddess, Zithril boomed. A goddess and a child of earth and rage will be gracing our dance hall tonight. Let us make room for this event.
Servants appeared and started removing tables and rugs, clearing space for a dance floor. Women began taking off petticoats and tossing them to their maids, giving their dresses a silhouette more conducive for fast dancing. Seraphina beamed at Varys.
Well, what do you think? Should we give them a good show?
Varys laughed and looked down at her with shining adoration.
Only a fool turns down the opportunity to dance with a goddess.
The two of them practically skipped onto the dance floor, leaving Trebok to marvel at how quickly the room had transformed. The rugs had been pulled up, furniture pushed aside. The light had changed from a crackling warmth to the clear, cold blue of moonlight. Doors had been opened. A breeze was chasing away the choking heat of the fires, but the most noticeable change was the floor. It looked like a mirror, like a perfectly polished piece of glass. Whatever magic or willpower the servants had used when preparing it for tonight had been well worth it.
I need to get off this floor, Lieutenant.
The queen groaned as she lurched forward and grabbed his shoulder again. Trebok took the queen by the elbow and guided her towards the lounge in the corner. They weaved their way through the well-dressed men and women taking their places above their doubles. The chandeliers twinkled like stars above their heads and around their feet. Trebok had to admit the effect was beautiful. It transported them from reality to a land of myth. These were no longer partygoers. They were ethereal spirits, and this was no longer a ballroom. It was the night sky. They reached the couch, and the queen collapsed, Trebok standing beside her. They watched as lines formed, bows struck strings, and the dancers' hands met. They twirled and skipped across the floor, steps quick and furious. People stomped and spun, laughed and clapped, bodies lifted into the air, then spinning away once feet touched ground. The energy the dancers created was wonderfully frantic. The room glowed with it. However, there was only one couple that truly caught and held the eye. Prince Zithril was a literal bright beacon of light. He smoldered with grace as Rin whipped and twirled her dark skirts around him. The dress switched from looking like wings to looking like mist and back again, the black paint around her eyes giving her an air of mystery and excitement. Rin's liquid movements turned her into a shadow, and the prince was the sun. They were both skilled dancers, their arms and legs forming one long, unbroken line as their bodies moved with graceful speed and precision. The room shifted again, but the music remained the same. The same song played, loud and fast, as the fae girl pulled him onto the dance floor.
"Dance with me."
She smiled up at him, but those gold eyes did not belong to her. And that face, still and cold as a corpse, a thrall grinned at him, threading their fingers through his. "Would you like some advice?" The words were a slap, forcing him back to the current time and place.
"What?"
"Some advice. Would you like some advice?" the queen repeated. Trevok did not know how long he had been staring out at the floor, only that the song had changed and the queen now had a drink in her hand.
"Yes," he said,
voice stretching his answer into a question.
"You have good instincts. You knew we were in over our heads here before anyone else did, and you knew what to say to King Ferj to satisfy him on that first night. You have good instincts and a good foundation. Perhaps I should have listened to you better.
But you should trust them more." "Trust my instincts?"
Trevok asked. "Yes," the queen confirmed.
"Trust my instincts," he repeated to himself,
rolling the words around in his mouth. A blur of blue, black, and gold again drew Trevok's eye to the dance floor. "I might be able to wrap up my inquiries tonight." That was what she had said. The warded door in the servant's passage flashed in front of Trevok's eyes, accompanied by that clear, perfect pain in his head, a turning in his guts, and a question. What were the inquiries Rin was planning on making tonight? And how much trouble would those inquiries put the rest of them in?
You've been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston, narrated by K.E. Preston. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook at kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. If you've really enjoyed what you've heard, there is bonus content available on our Patreon. Every dollar there allows me and my family to keep doing what we love, which is sharing this story with you. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction written by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help by Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.